glass ceilings, aspiration blockers, or reflecting gender gains. Women in politics perspectives from three goal-oriented activists on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart.
I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
Iowa Communications Network. The availability of high-speed broadband service is essential to fulfilling the promise of a connected Iowa. ICN's Broadband Matters campaign showcases the importance of delivering broadband to all corners of Iowa. Information is available at broadbandmatters.com. Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
The Arlene McKeever Endowment Fund at the Iowa Public Television Foundation, a fund established to support local programming on Iowa Public Television.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating more than 40 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is the Friday, December 16 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Women are making big gains in politics. This year, for the first time, for example, nominated by a major political party for the nation's presidency. And, if all goes as seems apparent now, a woman will soon be Iowa's governor, perhaps by the middle of next year. But some say it isn't yet gender equity. And that's what an Iowa group formed 6 years ago is seeking. The name 50-50 in 2020 says it all. Seeking political equity 3 years from now, celebrating the 100th anniversary of women's right to vote. The organization's executive director, Mary Ellen Miller, has experience on the boards of the Iowa League of Women Voters and the Iowa Federation of Republican Women. 2020 board member Melissa Giesing of Brooklyn, Iowa, is a former president of the Republican Women's Federation. And another 2020 board member, Mary Ray Bragg of Dubuque, is now president of the Iowa League of Women Voters, and she's a retired political journalist. And she's been on the program before. Welcome back to Iowa Press, and welcome to all of you.
Thank you, James.
Good to have you here. Look forward to an interesting discussion. And across the table, James Lynch, writing for the Gazette, published in Cedar Rapids, and Radio Iowa's news director, Kay Henderson.
I'm going to start with asking you to sort of set aside the philosophy of the respective candidates and office holders. Is this the best of times or worst of times for women, Mary Ellen? You had a woman who was a candidate for president who didn't break the glass ceiling, but the glass ceiling is being broken by Kim Reynolds when she becomes governor as Terry Branstad exits to become ambassador to China. Which is it, best or worst?
Both. Okay, I'm fond of saying out of everything bad comes something good. We didn't get our first woman president, as many thought we might.
Well, what good comes out of that for you?
Because it is stimulating a lot of women to step up and say, maybe I should get engaged. We have a place on our website where we can reach out, people can reach out to us and say, you know, I want to volunteer, I want to help, or I might be interested in running. Before this election, I might get one hit on that little button a month. I'm getting several a week now. And so I think, yes, we didn't make it. I think another element that's hard for us in the business of recruiting women is the extreme negativity during this campaign season that turns women off. Women are very protective of their family. They don't want to put them through that. So we have to tell them that we will help them manage that piece of a campaign. But it still is a very strong negative for a woman to stand up and run. On the other hand, because of the outcome, we're finding a generation of younger women saying, this can't go on. I want to be part of changing this.
Mm-hmm. Mary Ray, what are your thoughts and the perspective of the glass ceiling in the state and at the national level?
We see this as really an opportune time with the League of Women Voters because there are so many people, both men and women, who are still kind of traumatized by the last presidential election. And the rancor that was so common during that election and seemed to just escalate all the time has left a lot of people feeling like, where's the room for me? And I have to say that both political parties have left a lot of people behind. And so we're looking at this as an opportunity in the League of Women Voters to say, you want a bipartisan way of dealing with issues. You want to be able to deal with things that are important to you, for instance, environment and juvenile issues and those kinds of things that are quality of life. We work on those on a daily basis in a bipartisan manner, and we would love to have you join with us. And whether it's a membership or whether it's just people who are watching us online or coming to our meetings or giving us support, we want to be able to tap into that. And we see this as an opportunity to do some soul searching, but also to reach out and say there is still a room in this state for that.
Melissa, the question from Kay is it good for women? You had a defeat for the presidency, but mm-hmm. you have an Iowa woman coming into the governorship for the first time. So where are you? You're encouraged or discouraged or what?
I am encouraged because we have a lot of specifically younger women who are paying attention to politics who haven't really paid attention before. I have a lot of friends and family members and acquaintances across the state and across the country who really are paying attention and want to become more involved in the political process. So I don't know that they necessarily want to run right now, but they're taking that first step of paying attention and wanting to volunteer or do something more than watching the news at home.
Are they scared by the negativity that was mentioned by Mary Ellen?
Oh, yes. I think that's definitely a hurdle women specifically have to overcome. And it seems that women often, the negativity sticks a little bit more to women more than men, just because we tend to hold women to a higher standard, I think, morally than we do men. And that's slowly changing. And I think when women see other women running, you know, even if they have some obstacles, they are more encouraged to run themselves.
Mary Ellen, regardless of political affiliation or persuasion, is there some regret that Hillary Clinton didn't shatter that glass ceiling this year, that you didn't get over that hump, sort of, you know, finally get that monkey off the back of women that, yes, they can be president?
I wouldn't call it regret. I call it disappointment. The truth is, most people that are currently elected have run and lost at least once. That's one of the messages we give women, is, and women do take a loss very personally. So one of our programs, we offer them a mentor that stands by their side through the whole campaign, because we know that there's just a lot of that kind of gut reaction that women have to the negative campaigning, to the loss. I actually tell them in our academy, go into the bathroom, cry your hearts out, wipe your face off, go back, give your acceptance.
Did you give that counsel, that support to any Iowa women political candidates?
We do it as a routine part of our training academy, Dean.
But,
we prepare them.
But after
them.
The election, did you go to some women who lost and...
We will meet with those women. We have two post-election programs. One is, the first one is for the women who won, to kind of give them an orientation. We invite current seated legislators and some lobbyists. The one we do for the women who lost, we will do that in March. And essentially the message is run again. Run again.
Melissa, you mentioned that many of your associates are paying attention now. Mm-hmm. Do they view Hillary Clinton's loss as just a four-year setback, or is it more like a generational setback for a woman to become president?
I think it is more of a temporary setback. I think there's some disappointment. I mean, that's a good word to describe it, just that the country didn't see things the way they did as far as, you know, friends who were supporting and continue to support Hillary Clinton. But that has been really a catalyst for them to pay attention and get involved. And so I think overall it's optimistic. The first, you know, day or two after the election, it was pretty grim. You know, I think everyone can attest to that, looking, you know, at the Facebook feed of, you know, women and men who were supporting Hillary Clinton. But I think after everyone took a moment to lick their wounds, now they're more energized than ever.
Just to interject here, you were a leader of an organization for Republican women. You resigned because you felt as if you couldn't support Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Given the video that was released in October. Are you welcome in your party at this point? How has this evolved? For whom did you vote?
I did not vote for the Republican nominee, and that's ultimately why I stepped down, because I was unable to lead the organization to fulfill that mission. I have received very kind words from people. Some people, you know, were upset, but I am still, you know, very involved in the party and looking forward to working, you know, in a bipartisan way and in some nonpartisan efforts in the future.
Mary Wright, I want to follow up on something that Mary and I questioned earlier, that is counseling the losers, the women losers. Give a name, and it was in your district, the 1st Congressional District, Monica Vernon. She lost for lieutenant governor, and now she has lost the congressional race. Is that a person that this organization, 20 or Equity by 2020, you'd call in and say, Monica, run again?
Well, Monica did not go through our training session.
But is she damaged goods?
It has to be a decision on her part, first and foremost, as to whether or not she's ready to take it on again. The losing the primary to Pat Murphy 2 years before that was something that set her back rather badly as far as the timing, because there were a lot of Republican women who wanted to support her. And for the Democrats to not nominate her set her back. And then when she was ready to come right back, as soon as Rod Blum was elected and announced within weeks that she was running again, that was a really gutsy thing for her to do. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people who said, this is a lady with her experience and all the rest of it who can do it. And yet, when you see what the campaign was like and how much it takes out, I mean, if you're a friend of Monica Vernon's, to say, come on, Monica, you can do it again, that's really punishing. I think one of the most important things that 50-50 in 2020 does is talk to the women who have lost, because I had an opportunity to be at the first time we ever did that, and there were probably 8 or 9 younger women from around the state who had run really good campaigns, really tried hard, put their whole heart and soul into it. And when we met together that morning, these were gals who said, okay, I'm here, give me the coffee and just leave me alone kind of thing. And you couldn't blame them, because it was very difficult for them. But we had counselors who came in during the day, psychologists who talked to them about winning and losing and helping them kind of figure out where they were. By the end of that day, those same gals were sitting around saying, you know, I probably am not going to run in 2 years, but I'm coming back because, you know, I've never been closer to my family. I was so proud of my kids. I know more about government now than I ever thought I was going to know. Mm-hmm. They were so invigorated. Yeah. And that's the kind of, I think that's the most important thing that we do, is say, lick your wounds and doggone it, it wasn't fair, but you know what, get back in there. And one of our founders, Jean Lloyd-Jones, had how many, 3 major losses before she finally got into mm-hmm. it? And there is a lady who's just an inspiration to everyone. Yes. So it was a rough year, and none of us enjoyed it. But doggone it, we've got to keep on fighting, because almost 100 years ago, we had some foremothers who put in a lot more time and effort and pain than we ever have. So, yeah, let's go with it again.
Well, let's remind people who Jean Lloyd-Jones is and what her record was, since you mentioned it, and some viewers may not know.
Former state senator. Mm-hmm. My favorite story about Jean Lloyd-Jones is when Minette Doder came to her in Iowa City and
both
said...
Both Iowa City residents,
yes,
we should say. Minette,
yes,
Doder, both Johnson County
former
Democrats.
Former senator came to Jean Lloyd-Jones and said, you know, when I retire, you should think about running for my seat. And we tell our candidates this all the time. Jean Lloyd-Jones gave the classic answer that every woman gives. Oh, I'm not qualified. I'm not qualified. That's the first barrier we've got to get through with women. So Minette said, oh, you are. You just don't know it. Come and trail me around the Capitol for a week, and at the end of the week, Gene said, well, I can do this. And because of that experience, that's why we set up See Yourself Here, a day and a half opportunity at the Capitol, because we want women to feel more comfortable in the building. They hear from women who are already there, how they manage families and everything. That's been a key part of our recruitment success.
Melissa, I'll follow up on that. Do you hear maybe a couple of times that women say, oh, I'm not qualified. Mm-hmm. Do you find men ask themselves the same question?
I mean, not as often. And what's the statistic? It takes asking a woman at least 7 or 8 times to run before she will run. And I think we can all agree on this program. You know, we are asking women to put their names on the ballot and run for office. And it just takes more encouragement. And a lot of times, you know, by nature, women want to have everything else crossed off their list and do it at the perfect time. And there really is no perfect time.
Mary Ray, we expect sometime in the next 6 months or so that Kim Reynolds will become governor of Iowa. Mm-hmm. When history records that she was the first female governor of Iowa, will there be an asterisk there since she wasn't elected to that post?
By George, there better not be. You know, however we get there is a good route to take. And with her having the advantage of being in office for a while, then she will come run again. We're expecting as an incumbent, and that's always a better place to be. We've had, with 50-50 in 2020, a good relationship with Kim. She was one of our presenters at our last workshop, very inspiring to the young women who were there. We feel like there is so much that has to do with younger people, and I'm talking fifth graders, mm-hmm. on up, looking and seeing a woman in a place. And that makes it possible.
Well, following up on that, seeing that a woman is in that place, Melissa, has it been helpful then to women to see a parade of female lieutenant governors always standing in the shadow of the governor?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's better than not having a female lieutenant governor, but I think our nation is moving more toward having more female governors, and we have many more examples of that. And I think, you know, in Kim Reynolds' case, you know, she was at county elected office and then state senator, lieutenant governor, and I think it all helps build that resume so you're ready to become governor. And women like to be prepared, so I think a lot of times they'll accept those positions first.
Mary, I want to mention something. I want to speak to your question, James, about was she duly elected. I would say yes, she was. I understand as a voter that when I elect a lieutenant governor, that part of that role might be to become governor. So I would say she was duly elected.
Kate?
The name of your organization is 50-50 in 2020, which is not that far off now. It seems as if there are about a quarter of the legislators in Iowa who will be women in 2017. Is 50-50 in 2020 reasonable? Is it a reasonable goal?
Probably
Can
not.
You reach it?
Probably not, but you've got to have a goal. Okay. And actually, we fully admit that we probably won't make 50% of the legislature by 2020. Better shots 22 because of reapportionment. That's the best time to run. You have a lot of open seats. And that's one of the things we do when we counsel women is pick the right time. Running against an incumbent, as you've heard here, is really challenging. We don't encourage women out there to run that are going to lose.
What would you have done differently in order to achieve the goal by 2020?
I don't know that we've done anything differently. It's an uphill. One of the things I say to the board is if this were an easy job, Dean, we wouldn't need to be here.
Mm-hmm. Jim?
Mary Ray, you covered the legislature at one time, and there were some strong legislators, women legislators there. Minette Donner, we mentioned, Pam Yocum from your territory up in Dubuque. How would the legislature have been different if there was gender equity?
James, when I decided to retire, the first thing that I wanted to do was start working toward getting more women elected. Because as I covered the legislature, it wasn't, you know, brain science that figured out that when you looked at the legislature, just sitting back and watching what was going on, who were the first ones in the morning? And who were the last ones to leave in the evening? And who were the ones who were working across the aisle? And it was always women. And I left there thinking, what is it about Iowa that we can't get more women down there because they are doing the kinds of things? And Pam Yoakum is an excellent example of someone who's been in there, you know, working for so many years, and bless her heart, constant, sort of the conscience of the Senate now. And to be able to see that what women do, and the interesting thing is the very thing that makes women so good at being legislators is the very thing that keeps them back, and that is to be so careful about knowing all of the issues and understanding all of the issues. And when you say to a woman, these are five things that you have to be if you want to be a legislator, and they look at it and they go, I'm not that. And therefore, I'm not. A man looks at those five things and says, I'm that one. Okay, I'm ready to go. So we're asking for a societal change here when we're talking to women. And it's not just a matter of, you know, you ought to run. You have to work with an entire structure, the education system, all the adults, everybody, to work toward these children feeling, yes, they are capable of doing that.
Okay.
Mary Ellen, you head a bipartisan organization. All three of you are associated with the Republican Party. Democrats in Iowa are just chafing because they've never elected a woman as governor, and now there's a Republican poised to do so. They've never elected a female to the U.S. Senate, even though Jean Lloyd-Jones ran. Now we have a U.S. senator who is a Republican. When you counsel Democrats, what are you hearing from them? Because
actually,
your organization counsels both.
The organization is nonpartisan.
Right.
The board is bipartisan.
Right.
Equal Democrat and Republicans. But the interesting thing that happened this year is we had, first of all, record number on the ballot, 65 women. Additionally, we had a woman at every level of the ballot, state level, if you included Hillary Clinton at the top. That was very inspiring.
But she didn't come out so well.
Exactly. Well, I call it the Trump tsunami. I don't know that anyone could have predicted that. I live in rural Iowa. I might have been able to predict it, but I think it was not totally expected for a lot of people. But the interesting thing is, I think the number was like 7-1, Democrat women were running to Republican women. We've always had this issue. We talk to both parties, and we say to the Republicans, you know, your bench isn't as deep as the Democrats. And I do think that that's important. I think, I go back to an earlier question you had. I really think the inspiration, win or lose with Hillary, the inspiration was that as more women run, more women see it can be done. And I just went thrilled that we had 65 women on the ballot this year. That's remarkable. I expect it to keep growing.
Jim? The League of Women Voters, Mary Ray, as you mentioned, is a nonpartisan group. Is candidate recruitment part of what you do, though? I mean, do you try to recruit women to run for office?
We are one of the coalition groups, along with a number of others, who that 50-50 in 2020 asks us, if we are going to be a member of the coalition, to do that very thing, to look for women, to encourage them. And it's something that we're learning, because as we start to see that this development, it's, again, a part of that societal thing.
But many of those candidates that you're recruiting, that you're looking at, don't have the political profile, the pedigree yet. Do you encourage them to start out at city council and school board level?
Absolutely. In fact, those are the very places where we are getting so many of our recruits for 50-50 in 2020, is women who have started in, like, school boards. Things like education and health, those are important to women. And once they get that, the feeling for it, then that's a pretty good way for them to start moving on.
Melissa, generationally, are younger women more inclined to seek office? There seems to be among millennials sort of a hands-off attitude to politics. They think it's, you know, dirty and nasty. What's your counsel to people who are in a younger age group and maybe not viewing politics as an avocation at all?
I would say if you want change, it starts with you. And you are just as qualified as the next person to run. And I think we're going to see a surge in young women running for office. I've talked to young women who go to different panel discussions or forums, and they hear what they're representative, whether it's on a school board or a state legislature, they hear that person talking and they think, no, that's not right. I know more than that. I could do that. And so I would tell them to channel that into running for office or at the very least getting involved in a local board.
The Republican women have always been there sort of doing the work of campaigns. Mm-hmm. Do you try to encourage women to run, be the candidates rather than just being there making the phone calls, doing the literature drops, the door knocking?
It has evolved into more of a pipeline for a lot of Republican women candidates. You know, the lieutenant governor is a longtime member, Speaker of the House. So the mission is to elect all Republicans, but that's been a natural channel for women to then, you know, get involved in campaigns and then run for office themselves.
Let's close with what may be the best advice you would give a prospective candidate other than develop a thick skin. Mary Ellen, what's your advice?
Well, I think they ought to get into one of the training programs. We're starting a new one next year called Step Up, which is really going to go out around the state and talk to women already in locally elected office, Dean, and say, here's an opportunity for you, but here's what you ought to be doing 2, 3, 4 years out, so that they've got a resume that they're building up. But we've got, in addition to our training programs, we collaborate very closely with the Carrie Chapman Catt Center at Iowa State with their Ready to Run. So there's lots of opportunity for women to become more engaged and really get some serious help about how to be a successful candidate.
Mary Ray, as a former journalist, how far in advance do you have to plan?
Well, I think if you start when you're about 13, and I'm not kidding, I love the reaction that when we are with groups of younger women, and there are children that age, and you just point a finger at them and say, are you going to run for office? There will be some that will do this, and there will be some that will go, I might, and you know, I'm going to vote for you. And they just light up. I mean, it's just, you can't start too young. But one thing I do want to say is for older women, us gray hairs, who've been able to raise the family and maybe those responsibilities aren't there, you run for office. Run, absolutely run for office, because there's just as many old white men in that legislature right now as you're ever going to see.
You know, you have that training already, and you've had it for years, in the Girls State organization.
Yes.
Here. That teaches young
exactly.
women the politics of getting elected.
We're also starting chapters around the universities to address that very problem with the younger generation.
Thank you so much for your insights today. I'm sorry that we're out of time. Thank you. We'll be back next week, another edition of Iowa Press. It'll be 7:30 Friday night and noon on Sunday. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart. I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
Iowa Communications Network. The availability of high-speed broadband service is essential to fulfilling the promise of a connected Iowa. ICN's Broadband Matters campaign showcases the importance of delivering broadband to all corners of Iowa. Information is available at broadbandmatters.com.
Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
The Arlene McKeever Endowment Fund at the Iowa Public Television Foundation, a fund established to support local programming on Iowa Public Television.